presented by DogNation.com. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
We will welcome back our good buddy Mike Johnson a little later on in the program. Before we get to any of that, I do have to start off with some bad news, at least bad news for Kirby Smart, because there's something that Kirby Smart really has told us before that he does not like, and it's the time of year where, gosh darn it, that stuff that you just don't like to do, sometimes you have to do, and it's no fun, at least from the perspective of Kirby Smart, but every now and then that's what the job requires. I feel sorry for him, I really do, and I hope that some of y'all feel sorry for him as well. It's that thing that he's told us before that he hates. It's flipping players before National Signing Day. It's a thankless job. It's a tough job, and it's a painful thing to have to do. But as you get ready for National Signing Day, if you want to be a program of the caliber of Georgia, sometimes that's what you do have to do. Let me go back to a year ago when Kirby, among others, flipped Quay Walker, the linebacker from Alabama. Walker also chose Georgia over Tennessee that day, the famous hat toss, as you may remember. And Georgia fans were thrilled. They were celebrating. Yeah, Georgia flipped a player from one of its biggest rivals, the Bull of the Woods in the SEC, the Alabama Crimson Tide. But Georgia flipped somebody there. Kirby Smart, the adult in the room, says, hold on, y'all. Don't be getting too excited about flips. Flips may be fun for you, but it's tough for me. It's hard for me. Y'all feel sorry for Kirby Smart as he reminds us about this. Take a listen.
To me, there's no great sensation in flipping a kid because I don't think it teaches kids the right thing. I think we as a coaches in the profession understand I have tremendous respect for the guy on the other side of that flip. A lot of those guys are my friends. A lot of those guys I worked with. It's great for the fans, and they all want to, you know, make a big deal about it. But ultimately, it's really about the relationships we built with that kid all along. You know, the fan thinks that Otis Reese decided last night he was going to go to Georgia. That wasn't the case. There was a relationship that was developed over the last year. You know, same thing with Quay. I mean, these are kids that they're torn. It's a tough decision. We make it hard. We make it hard as coaches on them. So when they do the flip, I know there's somebody on the other side of that. I've been on the other side of that. So I'm not one to get into enjoyment of that. I think it's more about what's right for the kid and how is his future going to be best served by going to the University of Georgia academically so that he can set himself up for success in life.
So listen, y'all. I mean, y'all may make a big deal about flipping players for football. Kirby Smart's worried about academics and what's right for the kid over the long term. So some of y'all need to take that a little bit more seriously. But in all seriousness, while Kirby Smart may downplay the significance of a flip, Georgia fans do like that kind of thing. And yesterday, on Before the Hedges, presented by Kroger, that was a big topic on the show. Will Georgia get a flip before National Signing Day? A lot of great work got done in December leading up to the start of the early signing period. But how about the traditional old school National Signing Day? Can Georgia still finish with a flurry here leading into this date as the 2019 recruiting cycle comes to a close? There would really seem to be only a couple of names as potential options right now for that flip. If Georgia's going to get one, it would seem to be one of two guys. Nick Cross, the four-star defensive back currently committed to Florida State, or the five-star receiver George Pickens currently committed to Auburn. Right now, it would seem to certainly suggest the chances, at least according to our recruiting insider and expert Jeff Sintel, the chances of flipping Cross may be greater right now than the chances of flipping Pickens for a number of reasons. First of all, when it comes to Nick Cross, this is a guy that's had some interest in Georgia before. We'll talk more about that in a moment. But in terms of the possibility of how Jeff views things, the chances that Georgia might be able to flip Nick Cross away from Florida State, Jeff talked about that final lead up to National Signing Day yesterday and what that might mean for Georgia when it comes to the four-star defensive back Nick Cross. Take a listen to this.
Flips are very interesting because these next 2 weeks, I know everybody's like, hold on a second. Signing day's coming up, right? There's going to be big weekends, right? Perhaps the biggest remaining news on the visit front left for Georgia in 2019 is if Georgia can take away that last official visit left for Nick Cross. Reports out there say he's currently going to go to Penn State for that one. But if Georgia can come in and swoop in and get a late official visit from Nick Cross, I think that might be the biggest remaining piece of 2019 visit news on the board for the Bulldogs.
So it's not the only piece of recruiting news left for Georgia for 2019, but if you're looking for that flip news, that, you know, quote-unquote surprise news, Jeff Sintel says watching what happens the rest of the way with Nick Cross may be the thing to look at. We do have some public evidence that Cross Ross is at least considering Georgia right now based on something that he's tweeted recently. Do you remember we talked about the hiring of Charlton Warren as new defensive backs coach at Georgia when Kirby Smart tweeted that out? We talked earlier in the week the fact that Nick Cross had noticed that. In fact, here's what Cross himself kind of tweeted about that once the news became official. He had those eyeballs emojis, those ideas that he's looking. Yeah, you see Nick Cross there on your screen if you're watching on video, looking and noticing the fact that Charlton Warren's there. That obviously got his attention, which is a lot of the reason why that move to hire Charlton Warren was made, so that you could go out and get the attention of guys like Nick Cross, and apparently that has worked out just that same way. As I said, though, Cross is not the only flip candidate for Georgia, although he might be the most likely. The other guy that's out there is the five-star wide receiver George Pickens. And y'all know, I have talked about this ad nauseum, about my belief that Georgia needs to upgrade its wide receiver recruitment and that Pickens would be a really good name to be able to do that. I am on the record as saying, speaking as a fan, I would really like to see Georgia bring in George Pickens. And every time I bring it up, Jeff Sintel is there to pump the brakes and say slow down and say there's a lot to consider here and don't get, you know, way too out in front of this, too much of the cart out in front of the horse. And yesterday on Before the Edge, presented by Kroger, this other potential flip candidate flipping Pickens away from Auburn, Jeff Sintel was once again there to say, BA, don't get too excited about this as of yet.
What I'll say on the Pickens recruitment is I think that would be obviously the 21-gun salute ending to the 2019 recruiting class, but I'm just going to pump the brakes on everybody with this, guys. It is complicated, and I think that the right thing to say here is there are many hurdles to clear before George Pickens is showing off that great catch radius for the University of Georgia anytime soon.
Listen, sometimes the it's complicated relationship status can still lead to true love, I'd like to think, and maybe at some point in time, George Pickens and Georgia can fall into true love with each other, but as of now, I mean, listen, if Jeff's going to keep saying the same thing over and over again, at a certain point, I'm going to have to buy into what he says. I joked, I think it was exactly a week ago on this program, that I was going to keep asking the questions about George Pickens until I finally got the answer that I wanted to get, and that may actually never happen, but for right now, I'm forced to only take Jeff at his word when he says it's complicated with Pickens and there's a lot to think about here. And I know there's even been some, you know, public online chatter over the last couple of days about the notion that Pickens eventually sticks with Auburn, doesn't flip away to anywhere. So we'll keep watching the story. But I guess it is fair for me to point out that as of right now, Jeff says more likely with Nick Cross than George Pickens on the flip front. But as I said a moment ago, the potential for flips, taking a player from another school, isn't the only recruiting news that Georgia still has out there as we head towards the close of the 2019 cycle coming up on February 6th. There's also the big news of Kyer Elam, who did have the high-profile visit to Georgia this past weekend and was on campus when the announcement of Charlton Warren was made as Georgia's defensive backs coach. But once again, to go back to yesterday's edition of Before the Hedges presented by Kroger, Jeff Sintel said something very interesting about Elam. We've made a big deal about the hire of Charlton Warren and the impact that might have. We've actually, and this is a hard thing for us to do, we've actually shown some respect to Florida for its ability to potentially be a recruiting nemesis for Georgia against Kyer Elam. Y'all know that for the most part, I completely disregarded Florida for most of the last couple of years. I've chosen to pay them a little bit of respect for their potential ability to make a little bit of inroads here with Kyer Elam. However, Jeff, speaking objectively as a journalist here, as an analyst here, did strike a very hopeful tone for Georgia fans when it comes to Kyer Elam yesterday. I think it's my duty to make sure you're all aware of this. Obviously, there's still some work to be done, but Jeff thinks the work that Georgia has done thus far when it comes to Kyer Elam has certainly been very good work. Here is Jeff on Kyer Elam.
With Kyer, I'm going to choose some very simple statements here, and I think Georgia was in a fantastic spot for Kyer Elam. Prior to Mel Tucker's decision, I think Georgia was still in a great spot for Kyer Elam in the kind of Coach Tucker limbo a little bit. And here's what happens. By signing and hiring Charlton Warren, Georgia has automatically, instantly, like that, created a strong recruiting relationship between the new defensive backs coach and the biggest remaining priority target of the class.
I mean, listen, you like to hear that if you're a Georgia fan. I think Elam would be a massive addition before the 2019 class closes out. And Jeff chooses his words carefully. The fact that he speaks hopefully there from the Georgia fans' perspective about Elam, I think that means a lot to me. There's also the other name that's out there when it comes to tight ends. Georgia needs one right now. Brett Scyther visited this past weekend. And, boy, it certainly seems like, even though Scyther's not that highly rated of a player, he's only a three-star guy, you know, top 75 tight ends in the country, I guess, something along those lines. This is not a highly regarded player, at least by the rating services perspective. But Jeff says the overall truth of who Scyther is as a player may be actually a lot better than that because of some interesting circumstances in Scyther's past. Here's more from Jeff Sintel about another name that Georgia may add before the signing period comes to an end.
Catches the ball really well. What he does after the catch is really nice as well. And really, the reason that rating is so low is because it's a low sample size of highlights. Just played his junior season and senior season. Didn't really have a great junior season at all. And really started showing what he can do in his senior year. And these highlights, guys, this is something that frustrates the college coaches I know to no end. It's when that guy just explodes late in his senior year. And all of a sudden, all that recruiting they've done for other tight ends and all those offers, when they see a kid emerge that's better than some of the guys they got, that's kind of a fleeting feeling right now. And I think with Scyther, you get a lot of that. 6'5", about 220, checks a lot of boxes.
So listen, this is a very interesting potential close for Georgia with its class. Pickens may be the long shot. You may push him aside for a moment. Elam, Georgia may actually have the inside track on that right now. And there's the possibility of maybe adding another defensive back like Nick Cross if Georgia can do some real work here and hold off the school that he's committed to, Florida State, and another school making a push, Penn State. When you think about the potential possibilities for Georgia's close to a 2019 class, there are certainly a lot of them, and there are plenty of scenarios that could lead to a lot of Georgia fans having plenty to smile about come early February. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. It is great to have you with us today, live on video, as we are every day, 10 a.m., Dog Nation Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, also on the radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref with our friends out there, and podcast form, wherever podcasts can be found, on the Apple Podcast Player, the Google Podcast Player for the Android devices. We post the show at theworldfamousdognation.com. We are just really glad to have you with the program here today, and we are looking forward to seeing you in person coming up on Tuesday when we are live for the very first time ever at the Marlowe's Tavern in Kennesaw. Now, we've done a lot of Marlowe's Tavern events. They've all been fun. Our countdown to signing day events, frankly, are among my favorite things we do at Marlowe's really in any year. And I am really excited about being in Kennesaw for the first time. We've heard from a lot of people saying, hey, y'all, when is Dog Nation coming to Cobb County again? And we said, we want to do that soon. And now we get a chance to actually put our money where our mouth is and be with you this upcoming Tuesday at 745 Chastain Road in Kennesaw. That's the address. I'll say it for you one more time. 745 Chastain Road in Kennesaw. It's this upcoming Tuesday from 6 to 8 p.m. It's our countdown to signing day event. You heard a lot of great stuff a moment ago from Jeff Sintel on the recruiting front. A lot of times at a Marlowe's Tavern, he'll give you the story behind the story, and so that's one of the reasons why you want to be there. We'll look forward to seeing you then coming up this Tuesday at the Marlowe's Tavern in Kennesaw from 6 to 8 p.m. for that. We'll have Mike Johnson, as I said, coming up in just a moment. Great SEC analyst. A lot to say about Georgia today. I'm really looking forward to that with him. Before that, let's go around the doghouse here today, presented by Online Trading Academy. And I want to make you aware of something that ESPN has recently said about Georgia. I think part of our job during the offseason is to collect the opinions that are out there outside the bubble of Dog Nation, as I like to say from time to time, about what the perception is of Georgia at the moment. And I know Connor Riley wrote about this at DogNation.com yesterday, too, so you can check out his piece at DogNation.com on this. But ESPN does their concerns for all of its way too early top 25 teams. And I like reading these, not just about Georgia, but the other teams involved as well. But what was said about Georgia I thought was really interesting. And for me, this kind of shows the contrast with what I think the people closest to Georgia really understand, and maybe the misunderstanding that happens the farther you get away from really the nucleus of Georgia football talk. Let me show you the quote here from Alex Scarborough writing about a potential concern for Georgia. It's about losing guys off the offense, including guys in the NFL draft. Scarborough writes, having quarterback Jake Fromm back for another season is great, but what about the cast of characters surrounding him, he asks. Scarborough goes on to write, Jim Chaney left for Tennessee. Two of his top wideouts, Riley Ridley and McCole Hardman, declared for the NFL draft. draft. So did tight end Isaac Nada and running back Elijah Holyfield. The only good news is that other than center Lamont Gilyard, everyone on the line should be back. That's Alex Scarborough from ESPN. I want to make this very clear. For me, I think when you look at the juniors that have left for Georgia in the NFL draft, as I've said over and over again, this is just the cost of doing business at the major college level. When you're recruiting at a very high level, you're going to have guys that want to go try the NFL. Now, from the Georgia fans' perspective, they are disappointed because with the exception of Riley Ridley, the other three may not be drafted all that high. But if they have a chance to be drafted at all and start their NFL careers, a lot of guys are going to want to do that. I don't think you can do a whole lot of hand-wringing about that if you're a Georgia fan. And I don't think you should disregard what Scarborough mentions at the end of that piece, that other than Gilyard, the rest of the offensive line is coming back. When you think about the depth that Georgia has along its offensive line, really talented recruits getting a little older, getting a little more seasoned, I think the overall depth of the offensive line for Georgia in 2019 is actually greater than it was for 2018. We've been saying over and over again that we don't think that the departures that Georgia's had from offense, whether it be coaching or personnel related, do anything to affect the numbers that Georgia put up a season ago. It was one of the most efficient offenses in America last season. We believe that's going to once again be true in 2019. New offensive coordinator, few new names to know for the casual fans, but the overall results, we think, are essentially going to be the same. If I'm writing that piece about biggest concern, I'm not mentioning offense right now. I'm probably mentioning how does Georgia replace DeAndre Baker. We saw how tough it was a year ago to replace Roquan Smith. There are candidates to replace Baker on the defense. For me, though, that's the bigger concern right now than anything that's going to happen offensively. But nonetheless, it's Around the Doghouse here today presented by Online Trading Academy, which provides professional instruction on how you can make money in the markets. And that's true no matter which direction the market moves, which is a really important thing. Online Trading Academy students learn a step-by-step approach to trading and investing. The classes cover a spectrum of trading styles and asset classes, and they're offered in the classroom and online. So you're going to want to invest in yourself today. It's one of the best decisions you could ever make, and the way to do that is to sign up at tradingacademy.com/Atlanta. Once again, that's tradingacademy.com/Atlanta. Learn more about Online Trading Academy, and then you can be making money in the markets. All right, I've got a really interesting thing to say about Justin Fields later on the show that's actually going to catch you by surprise. But if you're a Georgia fan a little disappointed that Fields is no longer on the roster here, I believe you're actually going to like this. That's coming up later on. For now, though, as promised, with a lot of insight on Georgia and everything else happening around the SEC, let's talk to our buddy Mike Johnson right now. And boy, let me tell you this, I am so glad to welcome back Mike Johnson back here to Dog Nation Daily, a guy that I've always loved talking to, working with, and it has frankly just been too long since we've had him on the program, and it's great to have him back here today, especially in a week where I've taken a lot of grief from some Alabama fans, so let me see if I can coalesce around an Alabama guy to at least shield me from some of that. Mike, hello to you, welcome back to Dog Nation Daily, and we really appreciate your time today.
Man, it's a pleasure to hear your voice again, BA. I'm happy to be back on with you guys. And, man, I haven't heard about this this Bama grief, and I'm saying that tongue-in-cheek because I definitely have seen a little bit of the Brandon Adams comments in the timeline on Twitter, buddy. But I hope you're doing well. It's good to be back on with you.
It is good to be with you as well, and I will talk to you more about that Alabama stuff a little bit later on. Let me get a few Georgia things in here before we get to that, and I want to bring in on what I was just saying. And, listen, I obviously don't believe that Georgia is without concerns for 2019. There are a couple guys missing from the 2018 roster that simply can't be replaced. That's going to be an issue for Georgia. But when ESPN wants to focus in on the Ridleys and the Hollimans, not Holloman, excuse me, Hardman and Ridley moving on the NFL and not and some of that kind of stuff, Jim Chaney going to Tennessee, for me, that's not as big a concern. Mike, you were on a talented team in Alabama. You understand the talented roster of Georgia. Juniors going to the NFL, offensive coordinators choosing to go somewhere else, that's just the cost of doing business, is it not?
It definitely is. You know, particularly this day and age where more and more people are choosing to move on, not only the NFL, but obviously as Georgia fans know, some guys just choose to move on to different schools. And, you know, listen, there are only a hand, you know, there's only a few teams that can absolutely, you know, deal with things like this, BA. And I think when you look at Alabama, obviously Nick Saban's been able to deal with it. Obviously Clemson's been able to weather the storm. And Georgia's right there in terms of the way they've recruited for the last couple of years, that they can absolutely weather a storm like that. Now, you know, we kind of crossed this bridge, you know, last year with the exit of Nick Chubb and Sonny Michel, where I said, you know, it's just very hard to replace leadership with guys like that. Roquan Smith the same way. But I know firsthand, having been around Kirby Smart and Nick Saban and the system that they both employ, that they are very good at developing those leaders, that they identify those leaders, that they put guys under the command of players they know can step into those roles. And so it's not just, hey, we're going to have somebody step up. Kirby Smart has already identified guys that can step into these roles and step into leadership roles and be more vocal and take on more of a load. So while I do think it's a concern, I mean, you look across the NCAA and college football and the landscape of the ACC and the Big Ten and the SEC, anytime players leave, you're almost worse for the wear. But I think that there are a select few teams that can weather that storm, and I definitely think Georgia's on that list right now.
So let me talk about the coaching part of this, too, because Jim Chaney does leave Georgia's offensive coordinator. He takes the job at Tennessee. He's going to make a lot of money there. That's not money that Georgia wanted to match. And for Georgia fans, Mike, the debate has been a pocket of fans who didn't like certain things about Jim Chaney and kind of wanted an overhaul of the Georgia offense to be a little more up-tempo, maybe a little more spread, maybe a little more dynamic. And I was always of the belief, as this conversation's been unfolding, that if you look at Kirby Smart's perception of his own offense, I think he was really happy with what it has done. Georgia has chosen to build around these big offensive linemen, which I know is close to your heart. Georgia has chosen to utilize that power style. And I was of the belief that in the changeover from one offensive coordinator to another, that's the thing that Kirby Smart wanted to keep in place. And they're not going to go no huddle as much as some fans want, because they don't want to tire out these offensive linemen, nor do they want to make things tough on the defense or somehow negate the advantage that the power running game might give them. I know, like I said, you're a little biased here because you do like offensive line play as a former offensive lineman, but what do you make of the fact that presumably Georgia's going to go into 2019 with a new offensive coordinator, but the same offensive philosophy that it's used the last couple of years to get close to a national championship, but from the perspective of some Georgia fans, not actually getting over that hump?
Yeah, I would caution Georgia fans. I have cautioned Georgia fans. Yeah, I mean, you know me. I do love the offensive line play. I love the style of offense that Jim Chaney used there at Georgia. And it's a cautionary tale for me. I mean, you look at Alabama and the way they performed on short yardage downs against Clemson. Alabama is a team that I've said before on SEC Country Live when you and I were doing it. I've said it before on this show. I always wondered if Nick Saban sold his soul a little bit in bringing in Lane Kiffin and moving to a more spread approach and moving to some different things. Now, you've seen Alabama's offense set some offensive records, but when it came down to championship time in the national title game, there were times Bama could not pick up that extra yard they needed to get the first down. So I know that some Georgia fans look at some of the situations around the Georgia football team and you get frustrated that maybe sometimes there's a lack of explosive plays. But I have to tell people all the time, B.A., 4 yards used to be a great thing in football. For some reason, 4 yards has not become a good thing here in the last couple of years because of spread offenses. But it's more than that. It's not asking your quarterback to make risky throws. It's not leaving your defense on the field for too long. It's not tiring out your offensive line. Their entire philosophy is built around it. And Kirby Smart did the same thing at Georgia that Nick Saban did at Alabama. We ended up having 3 All-Americans along the offensive line in 2008. And there's a reason we ran the ball so effectively. And we had Mark Ingram and Trent Richardson, those guys. It's similar to Georgia. And I would just caution Georgia fans, be careful what you wish for. Because once you go to a spread, hurry up, no huddle attack, you can't go backwards. All of a sudden, you have trouble picking up 3rd and 2s that you really have gotten accustomed to being able to do with ease at Georgia recently. All of a sudden, those downs become a lot more difficult. So I think that Jim Chaney will fit well at Tennessee. I understand why Georgia didn't want to pay him the money. I think, obviously, they valued Sam Pittman a little bit more. And if the numbers I'm hearing about Sam Pittman are correct, he's valued very, very highly. So it'd be interesting to see how they move along, but I wouldn't expect Kirby Smart to differentiate from the style anytime soon.
Now, just to follow up on this, to be completely fair, I'm a 1,000,000% with you in terms of your nucleus right now. Your strength is Pittman and the offensive lineman that he's recruited and doing a really good job of coaching up. And yet, Mike, to add to that, I don't think that should prohibit Georgia from being able to develop its wide receivers. You know, at Georgia, Mike, you're going to see first-round running backs. You've already seen some of those. You're going to see first-round offensive linemen in the next couple of years. Jake Fromm has a chance to be a first-round quarterback. And yet, you know, in terms of really producing a lot of first-round receivers, although admittedly Riley really does have a chance, I guess, to be one of those this year. But for the most part, we've seen receiver kind of lag behind that. So I'm all with you about, hey, maintain that power running, maintain that ability to do what you do well. And yet I will admit that I'm also a little greedy in that I still want to see Georgia add that wide receiver that can take the top off the defense. I still want that too, but maybe just not using the spread concepts the way they've proliferated through the rest of college football.
It's a very difficult thing to do, B.A. And listen, we used to get these questions all the time when Julio Jones was lined up out wide at Alabama. Why does Julio Jones not have 1,500 receiving yards every season? And it's just, it's tough. You've only seen a certain number of offenses really be able to do that in the history of college football. And I point back to, you know, say USC, Matt Leinart, Reggie Bush, and some of the guys they had playing out wide on their teams, very, very good players. And you only see that from time to time where you can develop that kind of West Coast attack. And that's what, you know, I thought was so funny, and Georgia fans will enjoy this. I kind of giggled when Jeremy Pruitt took over and they brought in Tyson Hill to Tennessee because we want to be a grounded pound, and then we want to be able to throw one over the top of them. And I kind of just chuckled, and I thought, you know, that's not that easy to do, Jeremy. You can't just run it up the middle for 5 and 6 yards and all of a sudden beat somebody over the top. But it does. Listen, they correlate, and I understand what you're saying. You have explosive receivers. You want to be able to exploit those things. But listen, in college you get the 20-hour work week. You only have a certain number of practice reps, and it's tough to develop that chemistry when you are focused on a ground game. So, and if you can get them both going, you're well on your way to that national championship that Georgia fans desperately want. It's just very, very hard to do.
You played in the NFL for a long time. You know the pedestal that NFL players get put up on, the big stage that comes from being a part of a game like the Super Bowl. And next Sunday, Georgia's going to have two running backs, Todd Gurley on the Rams and Sony Michel on the Patriots. And, Mike, as I'm sure you can guess, there are a lot of Georgia fans really excited about that level of fame coming for these two guys who are still very proud sons of the University of Georgia. And there's also the assumption that just helps the Georgia brand, it helps with recruiting, and it just makes the Georgia program seem bigger. As a guy who knows the SEC, but also knows the NFL as well because of a long career, how much do you think it helps Georgia to have everybody looking at Gurley next Sunday and looking at Michelle next Sunday and say, wow, they went to the same college? How much do you think that helps?
Yeah, no, I think it's huge. And listen, I'd be lying to you if that wasn't something that I think a lot of people look at. Definitely recruits. And it is interesting to me to see the dynamic between those two guys because obviously, you know, the careers overlap a little bit. But it's very different running styles, in my opinion. And so it kind of encapsulates the fact that you can do it a number of different ways if you want to go to Georgia. And I don't think that can be understated. I mean, Bama's selling the same thing on the linebacking side of it. Their middle linebackers, Mark Barron from the Rams and Dante Hightower from the Patriots, Bama's selling the same thing. Look, you can come here and play different styles of linebacker and do different things. So I don't think it can be overstated how big that is for a young kid, 16, 17 years old, that are looking into this next crop of superstars in the NFL, especially when you talk about Todd Gurley. They'll say, hey, I want to go where he went. You know, people do that with Peyton Manning sometimes in Tennessee and other players across the country. Boy, you know, look at that guy. Hey, you know, he exemplifies greatness. I want to go where he went. And so I think it is a big deal. I think Georgia, obviously, is going to do a very good job of doing it. Some programs I don't think sell it quite enough, B.A., but with the graphic and social media presence that Georgia has shown and Kirby Smart has shown the ability to really exploit, I think they'll definitely make it very well known on the recruiting scene what's going on in the Super Bowl.
I want to go back in time for a moment. This is kind of a touchy subject for our audience and for you too, but I do think if this is an important thing to get some more insight on, and I haven't had a chance to talk to you about this until now. Mike, we saw Georgia lay an egg in the Sugar Bowl, and let me tell you something, Mike, for a good while, Dog fans were not happy about that. I was talking on the show a good bit about how most of the national media was like, no big deal, Georgia's going to be fine, and yet there were a lot of Georgia fans who were like, hey, why didn't Georgia show up to play better? Why didn't Georgia show up to do more in that game against Texas? Their mind was on the playoff or NFL draft or whatever else, and a lot of Georgia fans were just really upset about that. And to me, it does remind me a little bit of what happened to your team in Alabama after the 2008 season when you went to the Sugar Bowl and played Utah. That was a good Utah team, but not a team that was better than Alabama, and you guys seemingly weren't there to play, you know, got beat by that Utah team. What would you say to Georgia fans about what that atmosphere is like when you're not playing in the game that you want to play in? And I'm not looking for you to necessarily excuse make for Georgia and what it didn't do against Texas, but, I mean, let's face it, what happened to y'all after the 2008 season at least looks similar on paper. So separate fact from fiction for me, if you don't mind, about what it's like to be in kind of a consolation prize bowl game.
B.A., when I was watching it, I mean, it reminded me so much of that 2008 Sugar Bowl against Utah. Tough loss for us in the SEC title against number one ranked Florida that year. Very, very good team with Tim Tebow at quarterback. We were not able to knock them off. And we went to the Sugar Bowl, and it was more of a victory lap for us. Or we thought it was going to be more of a victory lap for us. It was, you know, we're going up against a lesser team. We were highly favored in the game. We thought we'd just show up and put on the uniforms and we'd be able to win the football game. I ended up having to play left tackle. Andre Smith got suspended. I got injured in the football game. We didn't have much offensive line left. We ran up against some injury issues, some guys that had already decided to go pro. I mean, it, to me, Georgia and the Sugar Bowl is a mirror image. And I've told you that before when we have kind of compared some of the things going on. That Sugar Bowl for teams like Georgia and Alabama is a death trap. You go down there and you do not play. That Sugar Bowl is not a real football game. I tell people all the time, it's not real. It, you go down there and it's almost like a vacation. It happened to Bama against Oklahoma a couple of years ago, too, when they were highly favored. So, you know, I would tell Georgia fans not to panic and not to be too worried about it. It's not going to have a huge bearing on what you do next year. Now, if anything, B.A., I would almost say it's a good thing because you look in the mirror at yourself and you say, boy, we can't really just show up and win these games in this Georgia jersey. We really do have to focus on what we have to do to be able to win on Saturday or on Monday or whenever the game is scheduled. So if you want to really swirl it around and try to spit out some really good spin on it, I'd say, listen, they put up posters in the Texas Longhorns all offseason. You remind yourself you can't show up and just win football games. And they'll probably spin this into a lot more victories in the near future. I don't think that this is some kind of ultimatum, I guess, on what Georgia will be in the future. It's not like any other game. It's a week long. It's in New Orleans. You get a month to prepare. There's guys going different directions, and Georgia will learn from it. So I'd say don't panic. I've been through it, and the next year we win a national title, so it's not the end of the world.
I think that's the most important point. After not looking good in the Sugar Bowl, the next year things seem to work out just fine for the 2009 version of Alabama. All right, speaking of Alabama, Mike, let me bring you in on the conversation that I've been having this week. And I've been saying this on my program for a while, but as you might imagine, this audience is not going to be quite as critical of this statement as some Alabama fans are going to be. And by the way, this was totally unintentional, totally unplanned. I get called onto the Feinbaum show to fight against somebody else for what he had said about Georgia and Dog Nation. And then the process about this, and you understand how this goes, I end up making a bunch of Alabama fans mad. But I want to give you a chance to respond to what I've been saying. And I do believe this as firmly as one can believe anything. If Nick Saban was working on a 5 or a 10 year plan right now at Alabama, if he was thinking about the future, you know, long-term future, I don't believe that Tosh Lapoy is a coach that you run out of this program. And I know there have been a lot of reports about some issues that Lapoy may have had in terms of, you know, game planning and play calling, defensive signals during the game. But, Mike, as you're very well aware, he's probably the best recruiter that Alabama not just did have, but has had. And this is an elite recruiter, and you can draw a straight line between some of the best players in Alabama's roster and Lapoy as their recruiter. If Nick Saban's worried about the long-term health of his program, you don't run Lapoy out. The fact that he did for more seasoned coaches, and there's a lot of examples like this beyond just Lapoy, leads me to believe that it looks like Nick Saban right now is operating on a short-term plan. He's trying to maximize his chance for winning with a very talented roster that he has right now, which could be great for Bama fans in 2019 and possibly 2020, but would make me pretty concerned about 2021 and beyond. You obviously know the Alabama situation really well. How do you respond to that?
Well, obviously, you know, I kind of giggle, B.A., because you and I on SB Country Live went back and forth on this so many times. We've had these conversations. And listen, I think there's probably some merit to what you're saying. I think that Nick Saban definitely, when you look at some of the moves he's made, there has been a shorter rope. I mean, he has not looked at some of these things and saying, boy, I think it's the fact that he just doesn't want a project at this point. And I think that your statement would actually have a lot more merit if it didn't look like a guy like Pete Golding, who is 32, 33 years old, a young, great recruiter in and of himself, would be taking over that defensive coaching role. And, you know, listen, I can't tell you what went on behind the scenes with Tosh Lapoy. I do know that early in the season, there was some type of falling out, and Tosh Lapoy was removed from those play-calling duties. So I understand the angle you look at. As a matter of fact, B.A., if you were to take it a step farther, I might even be more willing to agree with you if you said that the Steve Sarkisian move meant that he was operating on a short-term play, because I think the Steve Sarkisian's one and done as Alabama offensive coordinator. I think he comes in for a year. I think that obviously they're set up to have a ton of success on the offensive side of the ball. And I think the Steve Sarkisian looks for a head coaching job after a year. So If you want to flip over the offensive side, I would be more willing to agree with the short-term analysis that you think Nick Saban's plan is under. But I don't fault you for that information that you gave out there on the Paul Feinbaum show. I just think that if it wasn't Pete Golding moving into that role, if it was more willing like Nick Saban was going to throw out $2 million at a one-year guy, then I would say that was probably more the case. But Tosh LePoy and Nick Saban, whatever was going on there, it just seems like they decided to move in different directions from each other.
Mike, I love talking SEC football with you. It's always so much fun. I know a lot of people would love to interact with you as well. So how can people find out more about what you got going on and your thoughts on things? How can people find you online?
Yeah, absolutely. The launch of the radio show that I do, the Open Mic Show, will be back on Monday down where we broadcast down in Destin, Pensacola. But also you can find the website on my Twitter handle. It's at MPJohnson79. And we love the back and forth. And I know we have some crossover listeners. So I appreciate all the input the Georgia fans bring to my radio show. And if you want to catch it, just go to my Twitter page. You can see all the information right there, PA.
Yeah, Mike, you've done a really good job of making a lot of good friends, a lot of these Georgia fans that watch and listen to this show every day. So I know they'll be really excited about the relaunch of your radio program. We'll look forward to having that. And, Mike, hope we get a chance to speak to you again here very soon as well.
Yeah, always enjoy it, B. I hope you guys have a great day.
You too.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Yeah, I go a little long there with Mike, but I tell you, I missed having a chance to speak to him. It's great to have him back on the program today. And there are a couple things that he said about the Alabama thing that I do want to make sure that we address before we move on and get to the SEC Through. You know, first of all, in terms of the public falling out that Nick Saban apparently had with his defensive coordinator, Tosh LePoy, the really good recruiter that I was talking about before, I'm always really nervous when things like that are so private become so public, because I'm a believer that there must be a reason those things became public. You know, it was Bruce Feldman from The Athletic that's written about this, Chris Lowe from ESPN that I believe has written about this. That's a very private thing. Coaches in disagreement with each other, responsibilities apparently taken away from LePoy. You don't find out about that as an average run-of-the-mill fan unless somebody wants you to, and seemingly there was a reason that someone wanted that out there in the public. You assume it's not LePoy who would want that, and now that he's moving on, it doesn't really behoove him to speak on it. Almost feels like that might be coming from the other side of that dispute, and makes you wonder, why does he want that to be so public? Well, why does that need to be out there in the open? The other thing about Saban, and this is, I was on another Alabama radio station yesterday, and I talked about this, and you know, I have to be honest in these moments. I don't mean to upset someone, but I have to be honest. When Saban tinkers, it doesn't always go well. The hiring of LePoy was a version of tinkering. All the changeover before 2018, that's tinkering, right? That's oh my gosh, Alabama's not the number one recruiting class for 2018. We got to get rid of all of our old coaches and bring in a bunch of new coaches. That's excessive micromanaging tinkering, and it didn't work. It's the same thing that happened with Saban before the 2016 National Championship game, where he's all of a sudden tired of Lane Kiffin and his antics and blowing out Washington by a million points wasn't enough. They needed to win the game by 2 million points. And so he runs Kiffin out of the program. He promotes Steve Sarkisian for the National Championship game. And it was a disaster. The Alabama offense was not in the same sync and rhythm that it had been. Alabama loses that game to Clemson. For as successful as Alabama has been, this is a program that actually could have won more national championships if it wasn't for the fact that Nick Saban's an obsessive micromanager. His overmanaging of this situation in 2018 cost his team a title. His overmanaging of the offensive coordinator situation in 2016 cost his team a title. If I was an Alabama fan, I'd be very concerned about his propensity to just get too involved in, you know, micromanaging situations. You've heard the phrase before, if you're a griller, that looking isn't cooking. You know, sometimes Saban's doing a little too much looking, raising the hood and doing too much looking, as opposed to letting his so-called process play out. But I guess that's an Alabama problem to figure out. Let me also mention my friends at my bookie. You know, next week is the big game, and of course, getting ready for that's essentially the gambling event of the year, right? And so if you're at your party, whether it's at your house, somebody else's, you want to be a part of that conversation. You want some action in on the game, and the best way to get involved with that is with my friends at my bookie, because right now they've got a great offer for you to kind of get things rolling. They're actually going to match your first deposit up to 50%. That means you get more money in your account before you even win your first bet. But you got to act right now, because this offer is not going to last lasts forever. Use the promo code DOGNATION. That's all one word, spelled the way it's supposed to be, D-A-W-G. Use the promo code DOGNATION. Then after that, you play, you win, you get paid. So find MyBookie online. Just type it in, MyBookie. Use the promo code DOGNATION and get ready for the big game next week by having some action down. When the team wins or the player performs well, you'll have a chance to enjoy that as well as a winner yourself. So use the promo code DOGNATION at MyBookie. You play, you win, you get paid. And good luck with that as we head towards next Sunday. All right, a couple of SEC stories to get to. And this is kind of interesting to me because this actually dovetails really closely to something we've talked about a good bit on Dog Nation Daily. A lot of Georgia fans in our comment section, when Georgia coaching positions come open, there's the, hey, how about you hire Hines Ward? Or how about you hire Champ Bailey? Or how about you hire former player here, former player there? And for the most part, I've kind of pumped the brakes on that kind of stuff, even though Hines Ward himself has told me to my face that he wants to coach the University of Georgia. I've always suggested that's not going to be a likelihood of happening unless this is a guy willing to do like what a Bakari Rambo is doing right now, really earn your stripes, the lowest levels of the profession, and work your way up. However, flying in the face of that is what Auburn has done, bringing back its former star running back, Carnell Cadillac Williams, as its new running backs coach. I don't know if we have there's the announcement from Auburn, Carnell Williams. They also put out another tweet, too, where they had like an old school Cadillac photo. I have to admit, I kind of thought that was kind of a cool image from Auburn, even though I don't like the Tigers. But they are bringing back Carnell Williams as their running backs coach. This is not a very experienced coach. He has spent some time at IMG Academy. And listen, we're not fools around here. We know that line on the resume is probably as important to Gus Malzahn as anything. I don't know what this is. This to me feels like a coach on the hot seat who has worn out his welcome with his fans, using Carnell Williams as a bit of a human shield to deflect criticism from him. You can't be too mad at me. I'm standing next to a player that you like. You like Carnell Cadillac Williams, so you can't boo me because look who I'm standing next to. That's what this feels like to me, despite the fact that Williams has spent some time at IMG Academy. I don't believe he's experienced enough to be a true recruiter. I'm talking about in the cutthroat business that it is. That's not for the faint of heart. I don't believe that he is going to be able to do that. I think this is going to be a failed move by Auburn, and I think this is all Malzahn looking to kind of curry favor with people who've decided they don't like him. But nonetheless, that's maybe worth paying attention to a little bit. One more SEC story I want to get to. I saw a pretty good piece, ESPN.com, talking about, you know, key replacements that have to be made around the SEC. And, you know, one of the things that does get mentioned there is the Auburn quarterback situation. The departure of Jarrett Stidham, and I was watching Stidham doing some Senior Bowl workout stuff this morning before the show began. That's going to be a big issue in the SEC this year. If Auburn can find that capable quarterback, then the Tigers are still a top 25 team and getting a chance to host Georgia and host Alabama. Those are still dangerous games. But if they can't cultivate the quarterback, either someone currently on the roster or someone that moves in, then, boy, this really might be a real dangerous year for Auburn. A couple of the others, personnel replacement issues that ESPN mentioned for those SEC teams, I think are really interesting. You know, Georgia's not scheduled to play LSU this year, but the departure of Greedy Williams, the departure of Devin White, having to replace those big names on defense, I think is going to be really interesting. This is an LSU offense, even with, you know, a somewhat shaky Joe Burrow, that I think has a chance to be pretty good. I think those freshman running backs are going to play a good bit for LSU. And I think that could actually be a fairly dangerous offense. But can they replace those departed names on defense? That may be one worth watching there a bit, too. And for now, we'll make that your SEC through. And here on Dog Nation Daily, I did want to bring up the name Justin Fields for a moment. And I know, listen, I get it. That's a little bit of a toxic name for a couple of reasons. But listen, we're not going to talk about Fields much because there's not going to be much about Fields to say. But we're also not going to pretend that Justin Fields doesn't exist just because it creates a level of infighting from time to time with Georgia fans. We're just not going to do that. That's dishonest. We're not going to be dishonest around here. And I noticed that Andy Staples wrote a piece at SI.com about potential intriguing playoff matchups, and obviously the chance of Justin Fields at Ohio State meeting Georgia in the playoff is kind of an intriguing, juicy storyline that could happen in 2019. I believe that Fields is going to be eligible. I think that Ohio State's going to be a playoff contender, much the same way that Georgia's going to be. That could happen. But I want to give you something else to think about when it comes to Justin Fields, not necessarily as a Georgia adversary, but believe it or not, as maybe a bit of a Georgia advocate. Because yesterday on Before the Hedges, presented by Kroger, we had a chance to hear from Robbie Ashford, the really impressive 2020 quarterback, who is strongly considering Georgia right now, also thinking about Auburn a bit too, the in-state school for him, but he's thinking about Georgia. And when he took a recent visit to UGA, the guy that he stayed with was actually Justin Fields. And you may be thinking, oh, that's a problem. You know, Fields was bad-mouthing Georgia to Robbie Ashford, filling his head full of all these kinds of reasons why he doesn't want to come to UGA. That's actually not what happened at all. Robbie Ashford told a really interesting story about this. This is a quarterback that Georgia needs, and if you're just now getting acquainted with him, you're going to really like his game. And apparently, Justin Fields told Robbie Ashford some pretty cool things about Georgia. Here is Ashford in his own words.
I actually stayed with Justin down there in Athens that time. And he was telling me how he loved him. Then when I heard him Davis transfer, I was like, oh, wow.
Is him moving on help Georgia, or is it not a factor for you at all?
I wouldn't say it's a big factor, but it definitely helps because it'll be another young guy coming in, depth chart for sure.
So I think there are two things to think about there. Actually, maybe three things to think about there. The more I learn about Robbie Ashford, the more impressed I really am with him. And I think that's a tough recruiting battle that Georgia's waging against Auburn for him, the Hoover High School quarterback. But boy, that's a lot to like about Ashford. But beyond that, the fact that he's now more interested in Georgia because Fields isn't there anymore. That's just the nature of the way this works. When talent leaves your program, either to go to the NFL or to transfer whatever else, if you're a program like Georgia that has some attraction to it, that's only going to make other players want to slide in and sort of fill that spot. In the case of Robbie Ashford, that certainly seems to be part of this. But it's also kind of nice to know that Justin Fields, who maybe late in the year knew he wasn't going to be at Georgia anymore, he still didn't badmouth Georgia to Robbie Ashford. Now, if we take Ashford at his word on this, and why wouldn't we? Ashford says that Fields actually told him he loved it at Georgia. So in a roundabout way, I guess thanks to Justin Fields for maybe helping out at least a little bit with the 2020 quarterback. All right, we will wrap up today's program and tell you that we got some great news, and we love saying this around here. We believe on this program that good Georgia fans are Gator haters, and Gator haters have plenty of reasons to rejoice because it has now been 817 days since those lousy, stinking Gators have beaten the Georgia Bulldogs, and that's a number that we think is going to climb for quite some time to come. And I mentioned this earlier in the show that if you've really listened the last couple of years, I haven't had much reason to give respect to Florida. That's not just because I am the chief Gator hater. That's what the facts on the ground have led us to believe, that Florida wasn't much of a formidable threat on the field or in recruiting. I'd actually shown them a little bit of credibility in terms of their pedigree of having defensive backs and what they might be able to do with Kyrie Elam. But as of now, it looks like Georgia's taking a bit of a point spread lead for Elam services, so good job for Georgia on that. Hope y'all have a great day. We will look forward to seeing you tomorrow right back here on Dog Nation Daily.